I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hello, this is Matt Weston with Battle Red Blog and, of course, Battle Red Radio. You're listening to the beginning of the 2020 AFC South preview, starting with the Jacksonville Jaguars. For today's episode, I was joined by Ryan Day of Big Cat Country, and we record this episode on Tuesday, July 28th. If anything wild and zany and crazy has happened between now and the day that you listen to this podcast, like Yannick Ngakoue getting traded, or Andrew Norwell requesting a trade, or Mike Glennon becoming the starting quarterback in Jacksonville, that will not be covered in this podcast. So with that disclaimer, let's start the show.
We're the Houston Oilers, Houston Oilers, Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers, Houston Oilers, Houston Oilers number one.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to Battle Red Radio. I'm Matt Weston, and this evening I'm joined with Ryan Day of Big Cat Country. How are you tonight, Ryan?
Doing good, man. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. So is Big Cat Country right now, is it Big Sad Country just yet? Are y'all preparing for it, or what's the first adjective in there right now?
Hopeful.
Hope, big
hope country.
I like that.
No, I think there's been so many years where, like, we're in like year 12 of our rebuild. Mm-hmm. And after the first 4, 5, 6 off seasons of it, you just kind of get in this rhythm of the off season is our actual season. And like those games, those 16 games that happen, like, that's just in the way. That's in between the next free agency class, the next draft class that's going to get you there. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where we are, I think. I mean, I'm kind of playing into my own stereotype, but we have a lot of draft picks this year and next. We have, like, good players at key positions. I don't think we have a very good roster overall, but at least it's entertaining. I mean, Gardner Minshew is not elite, but he's very fun to watch. So
yeah. And you also have like $90 million in cap space next year as well too. And so like in the AFC South, you know, I really think it could go any way with Houston, Tennessee, and Indianapolis. And so I think the Jaguars are really comforting this year. You know, we're like, you know that they're going to rebuild, you know, they're probably going to be bad. You know, they're probably finished last place in the division. And like, it's nice to have some certainty in a division that's wide open, and you know, any possibility or like any end result wouldn't be impossible at all, I feel like, with the other three teams, you know.
Right. Yeah. I mean, although we did have you on the ropes like week two last year.
Yeah.
And if, you know, if our coach had called a pass on that 2-point conversion, things might have looked very, very differently. But he didn't, and we lost by a point. And then the season pretty much imploded a couple weeks after that.
Yeah, but in London.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, the division is very much between the Texans and the Titans. If Bill O'Brien can get out of his own way and just not alienate every good player he's ever been handed on a silver platter, I think you guys would do a lot better. But Tennessee's built very, very well. And so I think it's a 2-horse race.
Yeah, I can still see Indy in there as well, too. I mean, like, I know Phillip Rivers was awful last year, but he was awful behind, like, 2 paper bags at offensive tackle. And so just with the offensive line where he can just sit back there forever and throw plastic bags in the air, I think that they'll be able to compete as well, too. And I like their defense, I think, more than most people do as well, with the Buckner addition, too. But so we came here to talk about the Jaguars. So the 2018 season was a disaster for the Jaguars. After they came off a AFC title game appearance, Blake Bortles was benched for Cody Kessler. The offense was injured. The defense played great, but they didn't force the same number of turnovers. And they also went 2-6 in 1-score games. So Jacksonville attempted to resuscitate this team back to life by signing Nick Foles. And so last season, what were your expectations for the Jaguars entering 2019? Were you expecting them to, you know, compete last year and get back to the playoffs and like have immediate, like have like an actual, you know, bounce back season after the decisions they made in the 2019 offseason?
Yeah, I mean, 2017 was, I mean, you could tell 4 or 5 weeks in, you could tell this was a once in a generation defense that we were watching. I mean, we had two games where we got 10 sacks in that game, one of which against your hometown Houston Texans.
Savage was sacked 6 times in that first half.
He was, and then for some reason Bill O'Brien just didn't start Deshaun Watson from the onset. He was like, "Yeah, we're gonna ease Deshaun into this," and it's like, "Yeah, I mean, I'm sure Deshaun has a lot to learn from Tom Savage, Bill." Great job. But no, I mean, Jaguars fans were very, very happy to see that Deshaun was not starting. But no, I mean, 2017, we saw that we had a once in a generation defense. Our offensive line was pretty good. Leonard Fournette was okay. He was taking what the offensive line and the, you know, was giving him. And, you know, Blake Bortles was bad, but not. He was serviceable, I would say, which is like elite level Blake Bortles. And if it weren't for, honestly, I thought Blake kind of balled out in the 2017 AFC title. Like the second half, that they took the ball out of his hands.
They limited him that game. Like it was like, we don't want Blake to lose, and so now we're gonna lose this game. But he was great that first half, and
he was. Yeah. The coaches drew up a great game plan. They had like crossing routes, they had timing patterns, they had Corey Grant like, you know, running wild like Speedy Gonzalez. Like I thought we were going, you know, even after that crappy AJ Boye on pass interference call. But, you know, I thought 2018, I was like, you know, hey, as long as we can keep the defense together, it's not going to be the same, but, you know, we can still do this. And then, you know, it just, oh my God, it Hindenburged like on us. And then, so my expectations going into 2019, I was like, you know what? We have largely the same defense. Like, we were missing a couple of, like, key guys. But I was like, we still got Calais. We still got Jalen. Like, we still got AJ. Like, we can still do this and make a run at it if we have a serviceable quarterback, which is what I thought we had in Nick Foles. And instead, we got, like, a dozen plays in, and he, like, shatters his collarbone. And I was like, okay, well, there goes the season, like first touchdown drive of the season, like the year's over. And Minshew came in and was a ton of fun to watch. Like, we knew we weren't going to win the Chiefs game, but he still, you know, kept scoring like he was playing NFL blitz. And we knew when Gardner was in there, we're like, we're not going to get a winning record. We're not going to the playoffs, but let's see what we have in Gardner. He's got 8 games until Nick Foles comes back. But going into that season, I had, I think, higher hopes than a lot of people at Big Cat Country and like people who wrote like at other blogs and like, or, you know, beat reporters. Like I was like, you know what, with a serviceable quarterback, I think we can have a winning record. I think we can sneak into a wild card spot. Couldn't have been more wrong. Nick Foles like imploded, run defense imploded, locker room imploded. Tom Coughlin, you know, just decided to cause a rift in the locker room, greater, you know, bigger than our freaking scoreboards. Like it was not a fun season. So I was sorely disappointed and very, very wrong, but I had, I think, higher hopes than a lot of people and, proven wrong. So go Jaguars.
Yeah, I picked the Jags to win the division last year because I was like, well, I think it's going to be a top 5 pass defense again. I really like the offensive line, and I thought Foles in like a spread passing attack with, you know, Marquise Lee and Chris Conley and Westbrook, and like I thought it worked. Like, it made sense on paper. And, you know, Foles broke his collarbone 9 minutes and 29 seconds in week one on that pass to DJ Chark, like you mentioned. And like after that, kind of was over, but like they still hung around. It wasn't until that last game against Houston in London where they got blown out in that game, where like Gardner Minshew just threw in the flag against the quarters defense. And it seemed like they were trying to sabotage him in a way that game so they could start Nick Foles after the bye in a weird way. And after that game, Jacksonville went 2-6 and in the season like that. But like last year, one of the questions I have for you is the Jalen Ramsey episode that happened last year. Like, what did you make of the Jalen Ramsey trade? Was he traded just because he didn't want to play for Jacksonville and Tom Coughlin anymore? And then also, were you happy with what they received in the Ramsey trade by getting 2 first-round picks from the Los Angeles Rams?
Yeah, with Jalen Ramsey, he was on I think it was ESPN shortly after he went to Los Angeles, and he was pretty candid in describing what went down. It was actually at the Houston game where some unidentified members of the front office, sat him down and kind of told him what's what in what Ramsey described as, unprofessional. And I think that caused a big, that was a big problem to Jalen. I don't think he wanted to stay here long term, even before that. But I thought it was salvageable before then. And then after that Houston game, he had that back injury that kind of hobbled him for a couple weeks. And for me, I was thinking, okay, he's not going to be here long term. He's coming towards the end of his rookie contract. Let's try and get something for him. Like, don't just let him leave and we'll get like a third round comp pick. So when Los Angeles came and said, yeah, we'll give you 2 first-round picks, I thought it was kind of a no-brainer for Dave Caldwell. It's like, yeah, you, if it's not a quarterback and someone's giving you 2 first-round draft picks, like, you take it. Like, you just take it. And I was actually thinking, because we were talking about, who was it that was just traded for 2 first-round picks?
Jamal Adams.
Yeah, Jamal Adams. And the conversation was, what non-quarterbacks have been traded for 2 first-round picks? Like Khalil Mack, Jamal Adams, Jalen Ramsey.
Laremy Tunsil.
Yeah, Laremy Tunsil. I mean, you could probably count on two hands the players, that you can think of that have been traded for 2 first-round picks. So it's like, as a general manager, I think you just say, all right, he's not going to stay here long term. Just take it, run with it, especially with the Rams, who, I mean, they're going to get another, probably 15 or 16 overall draft pick this year. So, that's just sort of how I thought of the Jalen Ramsey thing was he's not going to stay here. Just get what you can get. And we did.
That makes sense. And it's important to like think about that pick and kind of the scope of the 2020 Jacksonville Jaguars, because of the extra pick, they have the opportunity to, even if they finish like fifth or so, to bundle 2 first-round picks if Minshew doesn't work out, to move up in the draft and grab a quarterback at, 1 or 2 overall if it's required for them to even do that. So last season, Minshew, he completed 60% of his passes. He threw 21 touchdowns and 6 interceptions, and he finished 20th in net yards per attempt and 22nd in DVOA and DYAR. So do you think Jacksonville found a future starting quarterback in the 6th round pick of the NFL draft with Gardner Minshew?
No clue. Like, I have zero idea, because this wasn't just we've got Ryan Fitzpatrick, sitting back there and he'll be serviceable for like a year or two. And we're just, throwing darts at day 3 picks. It's like, we brought in a guy and we paid him close to $100 million to come here. Like, we rolled out the red carpet. Like, he was the guy. There was no competition. And Doug Marrone even alluded to this. He was talking about how 2019 has made him think of preseasons and training camp reps differently for the future.
Interesting.
Because he was like, I mean, yeah, Nick Foles, like, he gets every practice rep I can give him. Like, if Gardner Minshew wants to throw with the punter, yeah, I mean, he could do that. But like, Nick Foles is going to get the work. And when he saw Nick Foles go down, and he had to put Gardner in there, and he saw Gardner just, responding with, knee-jerk athleticism and just, DJ Chark's open, like 40 yards downfield. Let me see if I can get it there. Oh, I did. Awesome. Like, let's go. when he saw that Gardner had, like, was responding well to actual live game reps, he was like, I should really do this whole like quarterback thing differently in the preseason. So I have zero expectations for Gardner Minshew, like good or bad. I think there's a couple of key things you can take away from last season, like the fact that he didn't throw a lot of interceptions. I think he threw like 3 interceptions last year. He's a little conservative at times. He doesn't throw well very well over the middle. If you kind of force him, like if the ends are kind of doing that pincer move and forcing him into the pocket, like the Saints game last year, he's going to struggle. So there are definite things he needs to work on, and his fumbles. I mean, my God, he had,
I think at 13 like, last year.
Yeah, it was, I mean, Blake Bortles never had 13 fumbles. But like, no, Gardner, I mean, there are things he needs to work on. There are things he does well. But in terms of being a franchise quarterback, he's never had an offseason where he's the guy. Mm-hmm. So this offseason, he's the guy. And we'll see how he responds with, you know, months of lead up, an entire training camp, an entire preseason, you know, like the whole shebang. Mm-hmm. We'll see. And so how he does this year, I think will indicate how, you know, what the Jaguars do moving forward. Unfortunately, they don't have, you know, multiple seasons to really, you know, test whether their rookie quarterback is the guy or not. They have one because this is the year where they have 2 first round picks to package, like you said. But I think they'll have enough info to make that decision at the end of this year.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think I kind of admired by how Minshew played last year, you know, considering everything, to go from being a 6th round pick to being thrusted in there after, you know, Foles breaks his collarbone. And a play like, you know, he had success last year. I think 2 things I really liked about him were, one, he throws the ball downfield, and he was one of the best deep throwers in football last year. Which was surprising considering he's not like a guy with like really great arm strength at all. And also helps having DJ Chark down there. I think he completed 17 passes to him over 15 yards. And the second thing is, like, I really like his mobility in the pocket, where like that touchdown against Denver on Armstead in the corner of the end zone, where he breaks 3 tackles in the pocket and steps up. And it was kind of like Deshaun Watson-ish, you know, where he kind of makes something happen out of nothing. And at the same time, like, I think the short passing offense isn't really there. I don't know if that will ever get better. And then the pocket, you know, presence can get better. He ran to a bunch of sacks they probably didn't need to take as well too. But overall, like, considering the situation, I really, you know, enjoyed what I saw out of him. And the weird thing about the Minshew decision too for Jacksonville is that he has a cap hit of only $700,000 this year. And so it's like, if he's, you know, a Ryan Fitzpatrick caliber quarterback, you know, like, and you're only paying him $700,000 a year and you can get, you know, serviceable play, is that something that you want to keep for, you know, 2 years or so, and have a chance to make the postseason with, where you can spend, you know, $30 million other parts of the roster as well too. And so it's been interesting to see like what happens with him. I don't see Minshew as being like some cast off that you never hear from again. I think at minimum he reminds me a lot of Fitzpatrick, just with the way he plays and kind of some of the mistakes he makes as well too. And so I think, like, at minimum, he'll be somebody who will, you know, bounce around the league if it doesn't work out in Jacksonville.
So let me ask you a question. Like, talking about rookie quarterbacks, what with Deshaun, what were some of like the mistakes or his failings his rookie year that you were really like hoping he would fix? And what are those things that he did fix year two, and that year two you were like, man, he still needs to get better at that?
It's weird with Deshaun, because I never felt like watching him, he really needed to get better at all with anything. It's kind of more feeling like the offense needs to get better at making things, you know, easier for him, you know? And like the statistics show, like, you know, he takes too many sacks, he holds onto the ball too long. You know, sometimes he tries to make too many plays happen, but then you're like, yeah, there's no check down options. And there, the pass, you know, the pass protection's going the wrong way, and the running back here misses a block. And then it's like, oh, so you're upset that he tried to make something happen this play, but you beat Oakland the week before because he did exactly that and got kicked in the eye. You beat Buffalo in the wild card round of the playoffs because he took 2 hits at the same time, spun out, and dumped off to Taylor Jones. But now all of a sudden you don't like it because he had a fumble against Baltimore, you know? And so it's like all the things against him, I think, are more about the offense itself. And I never, like, you know, watching Deshaun kind of immediately, there wasn't really anything I felt like he had improved on, anything that he needed to. I feel like it's far and away from something that I could describe from, you know, the basement I live in, you know?
That's fair. Yeah. I mean, Gardner Minshew is no Deshaun Watson. Like, I know that. And they're obviously a guy you pick in the sixth round is going to have more glaring weaknesses and blind spots than a Deshaun. But yeah, okay, that's interesting.
Well, do you think Minshew's a good? Because my biggest concern with Minshew this year is playing Jay Gruden's offense, because Jay likes to run that professional West Coast offense, has a lot of short, quick passes, and I don't really see Minshew as that type of player at all. You know, like, I like him more when he's throwing the ball downfield. I think Jacksonville can run a lot more play action. They were 31st in the league, behind only ahead of only Pittsburgh in most play, or at least amount of play action passes used last year. And I just have concerns that they try to do like a lot of quick pick and pop sort of stuff. And because again, like Minshew, everything kind of less than 10 yards, he kind of struggle with, you know?
Well, to a degree, yes, Minshew does struggle with that. But there were a lot of timing routes. Like it was in that week one game against the Chiefs where I think it was his first or second drive. It was like 3rd and 6, 3rd and 7. There was a timing route to Chris Conley. And I was like, has this guy ever run this play in practice? Like, it had to just be like a piece of paper that he and Conley like had looked at one time and been like, all right, this is what you're supposed to do, this is what I'm supposed to do. And he was connecting on quite a few of those. And so while he does make mistakes, I don't think it was because he's just not that kind of quarterback. I think it was because, he's, you know, the understudy that is now thrust into the role because the lead got sick in the first act. So like, and another thing is you don't expect this from a guy like Minshew. Like, you expect Minshew to like come off the bench, like reeking of Jack Daniels and cigarettes. Like, you don't expect him to be this cerebral guy, this quick learner, this inquisitive dude, but that's how Marone and his teammates describe him. They describe him as like a guy that has a really, really, really good head on his shoulders, like, and not an intellectual, but he's a critical thinker and he's got a good memory. And he's a smart dude. And so his persona kind of gives off that he's just this like reckless, you know, like he's like a satanic Tim Tebow or something like that. But like, he's not, he's a really smart dude. And I think a lot of the reason he was so reliant on his athleticism last year is just, he was like, okay, I've never run this play in practice
before. Yeah.
What do I do? So I don't think he'll, I don't know if he'll thrive in Jay Gruden's offense, but I do like the fact that Jay Gruden will allow his quarterbacks to be more mobile than I think offensive coordinators past that we've had, and that probably should have been. Blake Bortles should have been Josh Allen before he was Josh, you know, before Josh Allen. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we'll see how he fits in, but I have some hope for Jay Gruden's offense and Minshew meshing well.
Okay, yeah, that's good. I mean, I'm happy to hear that, because I would hate for this whole Minshew thing not to work out, because, you know, Jay Gruden is trying to, you know, fit his offense, or fit Minshew in his offense, and try to fit some things around him for it. The one thing I'm excited for, though, for Gruden's offense, is he does create like a lot of yards after the catch opportunities. And D.D. Westbrook's great at that. Chris Conley's great at that. Cole is okay at it. And like, Chark's okay. Like, Chark's not like a really yards after the catch guy, but second round pick, Laviska Shenault's a really great yards after the catch guy. And so I think, you know, the wide receiver group can be the strength of this offense this year. Do you agree with that idea?
I think the wide receiver group is pretty underrated around the league. The Jaguars receivers group, I think that the way that they've assembled this group, DJ Chark is, besides A-Rob, the best receiver we've had in years. You know, Dede and Marcus Lee, like, I mean, those are just your wide receiver 3, 4, 5 guys. Like, Laviska, I still have not learned how to pronounce his name.
I don't know how to say it.
All right. But I think he can be something really, really special. You're right. He is a yards after catch guy. But I don't think there's a receiver that is going to rely on Jay Gruden's creativity to produce more than him. Because if you look at like what he was doing in college, I mean, he was all over the place. He played like, you know, a portion of his snaps outside. He played slot. He played running back. He was lining up in the Wildcat. Like, he has a lot to bring, and he's a solid receiver just on his own merits. But if Jay Gruden can kind of get, if he can get creative and he can start to do what I think is a weakness of NFL coaches and coordinators, which is to form their system around the players instead of vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
I think if Jay Gruden can do that and learn from him, I think that this receivers group can be something special. If Gruden doesn't, and he just sees LaVisca as like, you know, just another outside guy or a slot guy, you know, and he just sort of pigeonholes him, I don't think this receivers group is going to be very good.
That makes sense. Yeah, I want to see some LaVisca Fournette, you know, backfield action and have them run the option together with Andrew Norwell pulling, blocking nobody, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'd love to see Andrew Norwell like absolutely whiffing at a safety or a cornerback. That would be a lot of fun. That's exactly what my heart needs at 34 years old.
Yeah, I love that stretch power they like to run with Norwell pulling on the alley. It's like, I don't even know what you're even doing anymore with this guy here. But I want to talk about Chark, I guess, real fast, because I think a couple wide receivers have planned themselves as wide receivers number ones last year. You know, Chark was one. Cortland Sutton was another one. Devontae Parker was another one. McLaurin in Washington was another one, where these guys just in like year one, year two, and, you know, even like year four, after kind of having some rough spots in their career, really kind of emerged as being a receiver that can carry an offense on their own. And Chark was one of those. And Chark went from like having a rookie year where he had some flashes down the sideline with some go up and get it catches, but nothing like really all that sustainable. Mm-hmm. And so like, where did this come from last year? Did anybody really see this coming out of Jacksonville for Chark to have this wide receiver number one sort of year he had last season?
The only thing I was encouraged about after Chark's rookie season is that our receivers coach, Keenan McCardell, was still like super excited about him. Keenan McCardell, for listeners who don't know, and I feel really old, even though I'm like, this was only like 25 years ago. And it's like, that's a long time ago, Ryan.
That's longer than most people have been alive.
Yeah, I know. God. But when the Jaguars first started, they had a killer receiving core. Mm-hmm. They had Jimmy Smith, which I think most anyone knows, young or old. But they also had Keenan McCardell, who, you know, played the end of his career with Tampa Bay and Washington and San Diego. But, I mean, he actually has more yards and I think catches than Jimmy Smith career. He's an incredibly accomplished wide receiver. He's a fan favorite in Jacksonville. And Doug Marrone hired him to be the receivers coach. And he's gotten quite a bit out of the receivers in his couple of years here. When Chark was drafted, Keenan was like super excited. He was like, that's my guy. You know, that's my guy. And after his rookie season, like Keenan was, you could, in the few sort of press conferences he had, like, or the sound bites that he had, he was talking about Chark like he had, you know, gotten 1,200 yards his rookie season. He was just like so pumped for the guy. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, whereas you can look at the box score and be like, yeah, you know, where did Chark get, you know, that extra 900 yards between his rookie season and his year two? I think McCardell knew it all along. So, I don't think you can really fault anyone on the offensive side of the ball for a bad 2018. I mean, that season was just abysmal. Like we Cody Kessler came in like before Thanksgiving. and so it's like when you have like a quarterback controversy and on the one side is Blake Bortles and the other side is Cody Kessler, it's like, I mean, who's going to be good?
Yeah, it's like a bad omen, like in a movie, it's like a blood red moon, you know, Cody Kessler before Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
I didn't know McCardell was the wide receivers coach there. I remember watching him when I was like, you know, 7 or 8 or whatever in Jacksonville, and I was really liking him. And I remember him watching him play more than Jimmy Smith, but I remember Smith was really getting mad and was bald, and McCardell was the one, because McCardell played in Tampa Bay, and I think he won a championship with them, with him and Joe and Jared Vicious, and so I remember McCardell a lot more. I'm surprised that I didn't know he was the wide receivers coach there. One of the things I really like about Chark is that he plays in the slot and in the outside. So like 50, according to the Football Outsiders Almanac, half of his snaps came in the slot, half of them came outside. And that slot fade that they throw to him is like the slot fade is my favorite route in general. And I think Chark runs one of the best ones in the league. And it's a lot of fun watching Minshew throw that back shoulder to him and how he adjusts to it. And then even like, you know, whenever he leads him to the pylon, like his body control and his ability to take advantage of cornerbacks with their heads turned, you know, is really like surprising on both Charkson and Minshew's in last year.
Yeah, I mean, the offensive coordinators have not been very good as of late in Jacksonville. I mean, neither have the, you know, the quarterbacks or the offense in general. So it's kind of a chicken or an egg thing. But last year, I thought they did a good job of finding mismatches with Chark and getting him, you know, on that third cornerback, on that slot cornerback, and just saying like, you know, hey, Chark, just beat this guy, you know. Speaking of receivers, I got a question for you because, like, you know, I mean, you shipped off DeAndre Hopkins for like a six pack of beer.
I didn't ship him off.
You guys, I'm like the royal you. So
that bad man did it.
That bad man shipped off DeAndre Hopkins for a six pack of beer and a ham sandwich. Like, what is y'all's receivers group looking like next year?
It's just like, I mean, I don't know. It's the idea that they're fast, and that's really it, you know. So like Fuller hasn't played, I think, more than 10 games in a season, and he's incredible when he plays, but even like in the games he does play, he'll be out there for two series and then he's just on the sideline looking sad, you know, like a puppy dog in a puppy mill shelter, you know. And then you have Kenny Stills, who's, you know, very good, you know, number three wide receiver, and, you know, he can be an acceptable number two receiver, but you don't want him really in that role. You want him against like number three, number four cornerbacks. They traded for Brandon Cooks with that one, with the second round pick they got from Arizona, or no, the second round pick that they had, they got Brandon Cooks. And like, Cooks has had five concussions. He was completely absent last year. I think with Cooks, you'll see him like run straight down the field, but you probably won't see the same jet sweeps and little screens and screen passes, just trying to save the number of hits he has. And then they have like six tight ends. Who knows what's going to happen there? And then David Johnson, you know, hypothetically is a good receiver whenever he's going up against like Nick Vigil and the worst linebackers in the NFL, but against good ones, I don't see that same production happening. And the other thing about Johnson too is that he's playing an offense that's only used running backs in one way. Like Lamar Miller went from being one of the most interesting assigned backs in the league to gaining 260 carries in Houston and gaining 20 pounds and, you know, turning into Carlos Hyde, you know, a worse version of Carlos Hyde. And so that's how they've used their running backs all the time. And his backup is Duke Johnson, who, you know, is like a third down, you know, receiving back too. So I really have no idea how it's going to play out. I think they want to be like the Chiefs, but they forgot the Chiefs have Travis Kelce, who's pretty much the same level of receiver as DeAndre Hopkins is. And two, like, Tyreek Hill's transcendent. You know, there's not another speed threat really out there like him. Like, you can say, like, oh, well, we have Brandon Cooks, but, you know, Hill and Cooks aren't in the same neighborhood to play. Like, Hill's in a category of his own, you know?
Well, and the Chiefs have Andy Reid, and and that offensive coordinator, I forget his name, last year.
The enemy.
Like, I mean,
I have a poster of him in my bathroom, you know? So whenever everyone's like, oh, who do you want to be the head coach of the Texans instead of doing Bill O'Brien? I just point to the post in the bathroom, you know.
But the guy is just like a savant when it comes to designing his offense around the strengths of his players. Like if he wasn't in Kansas City, or if Kansas City's personnel looked different, the offense would look different. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the guy just maximizes the strengths of every single position, every single player on that side of the ball. And I was watching them just like absolutely murder the Jaguars. And you just, after like the third touchdown, they cut away to like, it was like AJ Boye, like looking at Trey Herndon or AJ Boye looking at Jalen Ramsey and just being like, what do we do? Like, what do we do about like this, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Houston just certainly does not have the personnel, but they also don't have the creativity and the ability to adapt to their players. So.
Yeah, and I mean, this idea, like, if they want to make Watson's downfield ability as a strength of this offense, so it carries it, I mean, it could work, but until it happens, I don't believe it happening. Like, the two interesting things they did last year is run deep crossers off play action and then run this, like, tight end zone read that beat Kansas City, but then stopped working after that. Like, Baltimore, like, they ran that play, like, five times against Baltimore. They got -7 yards, you know? and they tried running against the Bills in the playoffs. It didn't work because everybody had already seen it, but... it's fun though. So for Jacksonville's offensive line, I know we mentioned Andrew Norwell. I accidentally wrote like 4,000 words in a season preview on the Jaguars. And I described him as a walrus. And I don't know what happened between him and Carolina and him and Jacksonville. I think he just looks slower and heavier. What's kind of been like, what's been up with Norwell since he signed with Jacksonville?
Yeah, I mean, I personally wish he was a walrus, because then at least a walrus just sits still and like gets in the way. Like Norwell actively like goes the wrong way. No, I think that with Norwell coming, I think you have, you know, he's in a new place. He's in a worse offense with fewer, if any, skill players, like good skill players. Mm-hmm. I mean, offensive linemen are going to look better, and it's going to be an easier job for them when you have Cam Newton throwing to Christian McCaffrey like 300 times a year. And so with Norwell coming in, it's like, okay, he's got to block a little bit longer. Okay, he's playing from behind a little bit more. He, you know,
he's playing next to Jeremy Parnell one season.
He's playing next. Well, no, he was Norwell's the left guard. Jeremy Parnell's right tackle. So he was playing next to
he's playing next to Cam Robinson.
Yeah, he's playing next to Cam Robinson, who got injured. So it's just, you know, I mean, again, 2018 season, just abysmal. And then last year it was just, he wasn't good enough. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, we had Tony Boselli, who, you know, Texans great Tony Boselli, number one pick in the expansion draft of 2002. Tony Boselli went to bat for Andrew Norwell on local radio like every week. And after a while it was like, bro, you got to stop. Like, like, we're watching the same game you are, man.
Yeah,
like,
it's okay to say that you were wrong about it.
The guy literally has his back to the Texans defender sacking Gardner Minshew at this moment. Like, it ain't good, man. So I never want to blame the player totally. I think it's a team sport, you know, 11 guys. So there's part of that. But, yeah, I mean, he took a short drive off of a long cliff when he got here. And I think I was actually surprised that we weren't able to move him. You know, we weren't able to trade him this year. I thought we would, and I thought we would grab a guy in this year's draft. But, you know, it looks like we had our priorities elsewhere. But I don't know what's up with Norwell. He stinks. Yeah. He's not that good.
Yeah, it's been, because he was good in Carolina. He was, you know, infamous in like 2017 because he didn't give up a pressure according to PFF. And I found a pressure he gave up because that was the year Houston was looking at signing a guard, and they got Zach Fulton, who became worse in Houston than he was in Kansas City, of course. I do love Juwan Taylor, though. Like, I really wanted Houston draft to play right tackle. And, you know, one of the things that happened with Houston that draft was they got Tyus Howard and Max Sharping, who are both good at right tackle and left guard last year in the rookie spots. But one was drafted to play left tackle, couldn't do that. The other was drafted to play right tackle, couldn't do that. And so, kind of had a cascading effect that led to the Tyus Howard trade. But I really liked watching Juwan Taylor play this past year. And, you know, he had, I think, 15 penalties. And he held a little bit too often, but he was really strong and matched strength with guys like J.J. Watt and Cam Jordan, and, you know, played pretty well against Von Miller, too, as well. And I really enjoyed watching him play, you know, last year, too. So I think Jacksonville's offensive line should at least be average again this year.
Yeah, I mean, we at Big Cat Country, I read a weekly article where we just we look at the all 22 for, like, every time there's a sack. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm looking here at, on the year, I mean, Juwan was responsible by my count, like, for 8 sacks, second only to Gardner, who was responsible for 11 of them. So, I mean, and I'm no expert. I mean, it could be 1, 2, 3 sacks either way. But I mean, what happened with Juwan is just early in the season, he was matched up against some, like, very, very good
rushers.
Like, the Saints game especially was tough for him. You know,
that game was weird too, because I felt like he played well that first half, and then the second half, like, Cam Jordan's like, okay, I've had enough of this, and so he set really deep in the pocket, and so he just took those deep sets and just threw them, you know, a yard backwards, and was able to get hold of Minshew 3 times like that.
Right. No, I mean, what happened was he did play well, but that's the curse of the offensive lineman is, you know, you got 50 plays and you can play well for 47 of them, mm-hmm. and you get, and then you give up a tackle for a loss and two sacks on the other three plays. And it's like, you didn't have a very good game. And it's, and in reality, that's what it is. I mean, if you give up two sacks and a couple of tackles for a loss on a game, like, you did not have a very good game. And that's kind of what happened with, in that Saints game. But yeah, you're right. I mean, Cam Jordan, like, it was like, he just, his brain was an hour and a half late to the game, and he came in the second half and was like, oh wait, I'm Cam Jordan. Like, I can do this. Like, who I'm Cam Jordan. That's Juwan Taylor. We can win this game.
And it's 14-7 right now.
Well, exactly. And that's another thing, is like, Jacksonville never pulled away. They were always like tied or like 3 points down, like the entire game. If they had pulled away, like, Juwan Taylor would not have had that bad of a game. But again, that was the game where I thought Sean Payton had a really good defensive game plan, which was, we're going to do the pincer move. Mm-hmm. We're actually not going to go for the kill and allow Gardner to like run around. We're going to contain him in the pocket, and we're going to force him to be an actual NFL quarterback. And I mean, it didn't look very good.
Mm-hmm. So the last player in offense we need to talk about is Leonard Fournette, of course. And this was one of our listener questions from at Smith Grandma. And he asked, Leonard Fournette, over under 1,350 yards rushing this year.
1,350 yards?
Yeah. He had, I think, 1,126 last season.
No. Well, he was on pace last year to do, like, some damage. And then, you know, the run defense fell apart. They were always having to pass. And he wasn't able to do what he needed to do. But I think it's an under on 1350, because you look at what Doug Marrone did in that season finale, with playing Reichwell Armstead, who's the backup running back. They saw that this offense can be just as functional, if not more functional, with Reichwell in there. Is that to say Reichwell Armstead is a better running back than Leonard Fournette? Probably not. But it is to say that it doesn't depend on Leonard to score points.
Mm-hmm.
You add in the fact that they signed Chris Thompson from Washington, and who's like a Jay Gruden, you know, fan favorite. I don't think Leonard is going to be handling as much of the workload. I think he had like, what, 90? I think it was like 90%+ of offensive snaps last year, or before the season finale, he had 90%+ of offensive snaps.
I'm looking at the stats here. He had 265 rushes last year. Armstead had 35.
Exactly.
Ozigbo had 9, and Dede Westbrook had 5, and Minshew had 54 carries. So it's like, I mean, I guess I could do the math, but I don't really want to. Let's go 90%. That sounds good.
Well, and you look at Reichwell Armstead, like, of those 35 carries, like, how many of them were in weeks 17? I think he had like 15 carries or something like that. 50, like, he probably had about half of his season mm-hmm. carries in the season finale alone. So up to that point, he probably had 15 or 20. So Leonard was like, you want to talk about a bell cow running back. Like, he was a bell cow running back. I don't think he's going to be that this year. And so just for lack of opportunity, I don't think he gets, you know, even close to 1,350 yards.
Yeah. I would hope it's always better to not, you know, like, completely just have one back, you know, who controls the entire offense. Jay Gruden typically runs his offense like that. However, mm-hmm. Fournette's case, they don't. And like, it's better to have your running back get 20 carries and it's fresh every carry, then get 30 and that sort of thing. Like, the idea of it's nice, but it's not very nice when it's September and it's hot in Jacksonville, you know?
It's nice in Madden. Like, that's nice. Like, but it's not nice in real life where, like, people actually get tired or, like, they get a sprain or something like that, you know?
Yeah. The other listener question he had as well, too, he asked if Gardner Minshew will start every game this season, barring injury. So do you think Minshew's going to start the full 16 games if he doesn't get injured this year? Or can we see some Mike Glennon action in Jacksonville this season?
I won't be seeing any Mike Glennon action. Like, he might be taking snaps, but I won't be there to watch it. I think Gardner Minshew, just for the fact that, like, this coaching staff and this front office, like, have to see every single snap they can from Gardner. I think they're only going to take him out when it's absolutely necessary. Like, even if they're like 0-10, it's like, you know, hey, Gardner's our guy. Like, what are they going to do? Like, we want to get some film on Mike Glennon.
Yeah.
We want to get some film on like Josh Dobbs. Like, no, like Mike Glennon is Big Bird and like Josh Dobbs is a literal astronaut. Like, you don't need film on these guys. Like, you need film on Gardner Minshew to make the best possible decision going into the draft next year. And Gardner's like a pretty durable dude. Like, he would have started all 16 games if it wasn't for Tom Coughlin. You know, this is all hearsay and like allegedly, but like, I mean, I think Tom Coughlin strong-handed that decision to put Nick Foles back in. And I think if it were up to Doug Marrone solely, he would have kept Gardner in. Gardner could have played 16 games as a rookie with zero prep in the training camp in preseason. So until he can't do that, like, yeah, he can do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, it was fun. Well, one of the things about Minshew too that was like, I guess, interesting was like how, like, again, like we talked about earlier, like how they went through all that and for how well he played, you know, considering, and Football Outsiders, interesting stat that from weeks 2 through 9, his DVOA was 0.2%. And then from weeks 13 on, which is after they benched Foles for him again, after Foles was, you know, one of the worst quarterbacks in the league against Indianapolis. And I can't remember who else he played, but they went 0-3 during that time. Minshew's DVOA is negative 20%. And so, like, after he benched, it seems like maybe he was like, well, you know, who cares? I've kind of lost this for the rest of the year, and had kind of quickly become the starting quarterback again after that point. And, you know, they did beat Oakland, but he didn't play as well down the stretch as he did in the first part of the year, too.
I think Minshew, though, is kind of like a he's kind of like a, like almost like a basketball player, like in terms of once he gets in a rhythm, he's better. And when you disrupt that rhythm, he's not going to be as good. Like, you can't just like start, stop him. I think people are like that in general, but
yeah,
Gardner more so is like that. And so I think from Jacksonville, like, Gardner was like all in those 3 weeks where Nick Foles was just bombing. Like, Gardner was like, I'm here to make the Jaguars better. He was intense, dude. Like, his press conferences, like, he was not joking around, just kind of being like, you know, like he was when he was starting. He was more relaxed when he was starting.
Yeah.
When he wasn't starting, he was like, he was keyed in. He was like, I'm here, you know, and I'm here to be the best Gardner Minshew I can be. The guy, he was talking about himself in third person. Like, that's how you know a dude is locked in, when he's talking about himself in third person. So, like, yeah, he wasn't lackadaisical about it. He wanted to be that guy. And I think his bad performance down the stretch was because he was benched.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a hard mental thing to go from, you know, nothing to something after having it for a while, you know. Yeah. And then, and it'd be playing pretty well too, and be 4-5 and get benched despite playing well at the beginning part of the season. I'm sure it was frustrating for him. So defensively, you know, we mentioned that 2017 earlier, or 2017 team earlier, and it does seem like Jacksonville gets to have one really good team every decade. You know, they get that, and then we get to see them for 1 year, and they disappear again for the next 9 years. But
yeah,
you know, that whole defense is pretty much gone now. Ramsey was traded. Calais Campbell was traded for a 5th-round pick. AJ Boye was traded for a 4th-round pick. Telvin Smith, you know, kind of sort of retired. Malik Jackson signed with Philadelphia. Marcel Darius didn't have his option picked up, but, you know, Jacksonville, you said we may bring him back on a cheaper contract. Who knows? Dante Fowler Jr. is traded to Los Angeles. Barry Church retired. Tayshaun Gibson's in Chicago. And Yannick Ngakoue is now on the trade block. You know, which one of these departures hurts the most? And, you know, of course, Ngakoue is still on the team. But of all these guys that have left Jacksonville, which one kind of hurt the most for you as a fan?
I think even, so if we're not counting Ngakoue, it's an easy Calais Campbell. I think Calais Campbell is the best free agent signing in franchise history.
And one of the best ones in the league in general last decade too.
Oh, I mean, he set the franchise record for sacks. He had like, I think 13 and a half sacks in 2017. And the guy, like, I mean, yeah, he's a defensive end, but, and he is used to getting sacks. I mean, he's used to getting double digit sacks, but the way he was used here was kind of like you know, almost like a hybrid, like big end, defensive end, edge rusher guy. He wasn't, you know, like your Von Miller, who's like, hey, when he's lined up to rush the passer, like that is what he's doing. Or Yannick Ngakoue, like when he's lined up, like he's not there to do anything except for, you know, get to the quarterback. Calais had a lot of sacks where, yeah, you could say he was cleaning up, but if you're not in a position to clean up, you don't get the sack. And so he's holding, you know, his guy for 4, 5, 6 seconds, and then boom, like there's Tom Savage, like, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 times in the first half. So Calais, I think, not just the production, I thought he was washed up too. At the, you know, the first couple of games of last year, I thought he was washed up. I was like, he's done, he's old. And then he went off against the Tennessee Titans on national television. And I was like, well, you know, love to be wrong about my Jacksonville Jaguars. Like,
which is the best game in the AFC South every year is Titans, Jaguars, Thursday Night Football. We get it every year, and every year I'm so excited for it.
It's just such a shit show. Like, it's just like, when they inaugurated it, I think it was the introduction of like our color rush.
Yeah. And
like
it was
mustard
that, like,
yellow uniform. Oh God.
Yeah. The kitty cat diarrhea yellow.
Yeah. It was, oh Jesus.
So it's a shame because this year they're playing Miami on Thursday Night Football instead. They're playing at Tennessee week two, and they get to play Miami on Thursday Night Football. That sucks.
It does suck. Yeah. I mean, I think the world kind of looks forward to trolling the Titans and Jaguars for like a good solid 4 days. Like I really think that NFL media and like bloggers and fans just really love being like, oh, there's our, you know, there's our Jaguars Titans car wreck. Like let's rubberneck our way.
It's the best rivalry in the AFC South by far. Like it's my favorite one. And just like as being a bystander, just seeing, you know, what comes out of it, it's always fun on the internet to see Titans and Jaguars fans making fun of each other. And the game's always like really dumb and really exciting. Like last year, you know, Jacksonville goes up 14-0 and then a hurricane blows through and Mariota can't really do anything at all after that.
Right. And then Gardner Minshew like gets his first win. And he looked like legit good that game too.
Yeah. His dad was in the stands. He kept showing
his dad's in the stands. Oh God, that post game interview. I almost forgot where he does like that's where that meme comes from. Like the finger gun like that. But no, it's always a shit show. It's always entertaining. It's always like just, you know, very, very genuinely Duval, those games are. So I look forward to them. I'm sad that we don't get another one. But yeah, in terms of your question, it's Calais Campbell. He was a veteran through and through. I don't put a lot of credence into, you know, having veterans as like a positive influence in the locker room is what's needed on this team. But like Calais inspired a lot of dudes. And when he left, like players were genuinely very, very sad about it.
Yeah, he would have been talked about like the way J.J. Watt's talked about if J.J. Watt was in the league. Like, he was the second best, like, interior, exterior rusher in the league whenever he was in Arizona for that first year in Jacksonville, you know? I think he's going to be supremely underrated, you know, throughout, like, even after he retires. He may be a Hall of Famer. Who knows what will happen exactly there. But it'll be fun to watch him, you know, play in Baltimore as well, too. The next question we have was asking about Yannick Ngakoue. So, does he play for the Jaguars this season? Because as of right now, going into this offseason, you know, Colville said, you know, one of our biggest priorities is extending him. Yannick says, no, I'm not re-signing here at all. They franchise tagged him. And now it's kind of like nobody's offering a first-round pick for him, or maybe Jacksonville's holding out for 2 first-round picks. I'm not exactly sure what's going on. So what's up with the Ngakoue situation? And do you think he plays any games for Jacksonville this year?
Well, I don't think a team has offered a first-round draft pick yet. If they had, then things would be a lot more interesting. But to my knowledge, I don't think a first round draft pick has been offered. I have to rely on, we have a beat reporter, Demetrius Harvey, over at Big Cat Country, who he's been in the locker room. You know, last year he was in the locker room. He talks to the players. He's gotten to know them. And there's a couple of other beat guys that I speak to. And all of them kind of have this understanding, unique of one another, that Ngakoue just is a really like principled dude. And when he says like he wants to do something or he doesn't want to do something, he's going to do it or he's not going to do
it. Gotcha.
And so like it's nothing football, you know, it's nothing like too terribly savvy. It's just literally like these guys being like, when this guy says he wants to do something or doesn't want to do something, like he follows through. And so that's really the only intuition I have that Ngakoue is he's not going to play. Like he's going to hold out.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. I thought, you know, after reading some things and the way it kind of typically works, especially the Ramsey situation, the Fowler, or I guess just the Ramsey situation, was that he played in Jacksonville for, you know, 2 or 3 weeks. Then all of a sudden you have, you know, maybe a team like, I don't know, maybe like the Titans or whatever, and they can't get a pass rush and they trade a first round pick, you know, for Ngakoue at that time because they're 1-2 or 1-3 and they need some sort of boost. But based on what you're saying, if that's the case, then, you know, I'll go ahead and go with that for it.
I will say though, that if a team offers at least a first round draft pick,
that's it.
That might be it. If it's another, you know, Ramsey trade where the, you know, a Los Angeles Rams comes in and says, yeah, we'll give you 2 first rounders. I think Dave Caldwell, you know,
yeah, immediately
pulls the trigger. Yeah. He pulls the trigger immediately. I think that Dave Caldwell, I hate to give him credit, but he's doing the smart thing. And he's like, listen, like the way the rules are set up, we have you over a barrel. You have to play for us. And if you hold out, you don't get that year accrued towards your journey towards free agency. So if you hold out, all right, that's fine. We hold the rights. And then next year is exactly like this one.
Well, why do you think a team won't give a first round pick up for Ngakoue? Because it seems like a no brainer, you know, like pass an edge position who can pass rush as well as he does as a premium position. And he's one of the best in the league at it. And that like chop Rippy has where he jumps all the way backwards. Like that's one of the best pass rush moves in the game. And so I really don't know why a team who could use pass rush help, like I guess Seattle just traded their first round picks, but even like Indy who traded first round pick or, you know, whoever, like I don't understand why he doesn't have the market that he should have, you know?
I thought he was going to go to Indy. And I don't know. I really have no explanation for why he hasn't been traded yet, or not why he hasn't been traded, but like why a team hasn't stepped up and it's been leaked. Like, hey, you know, we're offering a first and a third. Because I think something like that, or a first and a player, I think that gets some consideration from Dave. I don't think anything that's been offered has been considered by Dave seriously. I think the most intriguing one was that, you know, reportedly there was a trade offer involving a Pro Bowl player. Like that's what, you know, that report said. And the team said it's not at a position that works for us. And so you kind of look through and you're like, well, who was in the Pro Bowl last year that like could conceivably be traded for Ngakoue? And it was Matt Judon for the Ravens. I think that's what the trade was. And it's like, if that's the trade, then Caldwell should say no. And so I have zero idea. I'm lost, man.
Yeah, it does make very much sense to me from in this perspective that we have here. How about David Johnson in the second round pick for Ngakoue? Would you accept that trade?
No.
Well, it was worth the try.
We don't need two over the hill running backs.
Yeah, it's funny how Fournette already seems over the hill, and he's only been in the league for, you know, this is his fourth year coming up. The good news for Jacksonville, though, is they drafted Josh Allen in the first round because Oakland was very dumb and had to be hipsters and draft Clelin Ferrell instead. And Josh Allen had 10 sacks, 13 hits, and 29 pressures. And also with the first-round pick they received in the Ramsey trade, they drafted Clavon Chaisson from LSU. And so it does look like you know, even if they do trade Ngakoue, that seems like a cornerstone sort of pass rush, like out there on the edge, even though Chaisson hasn't played any snaps at all. But like his college film is really, you know, pretty phenomenal. So it does seem like they do have some cornerstones there with Josh Allen and Chase on the edge. Do you agree with that statement? How excited are you to watch these two players this year?
So I'm not going to lie. Like when they announced Chaisson's name, I was like, who? Like, even though, I mean, the guy played for LSU, like I should know who that is, but my immediate reaction was like, excuse me. Now you go back and you watch the film and it's like, okay, he stands out on, like, you know, highlight tapes and things like that. And he can play multiple positions. He's like really versatile. And if the Jaguars want to give some like 3-4 looks, or mm-hmm. they want, you know, Chase on to, like, you know, play linebacker or something like that, like, yeah, he can do it and he could succeed because that's what he did at LSU. But, like, honestly, Chase on is another guy, just like Gardner. I'm like, I really have no expectations for this guy.
Interesting.
Like, I just don't know enough. Like Josh Allen coming out, Josh Allen, I was like, when Oakland was on the clock and Josh Allen was right there, I was like, crap, like, who we're going to really draft? We're going to draft Juwan Taylor, like, at, you know, at the top of the first round, like, yeah, sick. Yeah. And when they wanted to get, when they wanted to get cute and Josh Allen was right there, I was like, okay, sick. But yeah, I think Chase on from the beat guys that are here in Jacksonville, it seems as though he's the kind of guy that they have faith can be really good, but unlike Josh Allen, is not going to produce right away. He's mm-hmm. the kind of guy that is going to need to learn the NFL game. He's going to need to learn, like, some specific positions. At LSU, you could just put him out there because, like, I mean, even if he's playing, you know, the best of the best, it's still a college team. Like, it's still Alabama. Like, Alabama, like, is great, but the Bengals, you know, or the Browns or what, you know, even poor teams are going to be a lot better competition than he's faced. And so mm-hmm. I think that it's going to be really interesting if COVID can stave off for at least, you know, 8 weeks.
Or like 22 weeks.
Yeah. Well, I have realistic expectations. But yeah, if we can see him for at least like maybe 5, 6, 7 games, mm-hmm. I think that's what it's going to take for us to see him start to, like, get it and start to adjust and start to produce. I think those first few games, it's going to be tough. And, you know, we don't have a defensive coordinator in Todd Walsh who likes to give rookie defensive ends or edge rushers or linebackers heavy snaps. I mean, Josh Allen played, I think, 60 to 65% of defensive snaps mm-hmm. last year. Didn't start a lot of games because Ngakoue and Calais Campbell were in front of him.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think you're going to see the same thing. I think you're going to see Chaisson, like, play 60% of snaps. He's going to play less than that the first half of the season. And he's going to catch up as the season progresses. But I think it's a learning curve for him.
Yeah. And yeah, I see what you're saying. I really, and I do like the fact that you say, like, yeah, I don't know, I need to see more or whatever. Because usually when you talk to somebody, you know, you don't get that, especially a fan of a team. And you mentioned a 3-4. I really think a 3-4 defense is probably the best way for New Jacksonville going forward. We have Chase on Allen the outside, and I think Allen could probably, he's athletic enough where he can cover. You know, Chase on does absurd things like chase down CeeDee Lamb, you know, yeah. and make in yards against the after the catch for him. And, you know, this offseason, they just didn't really have a whole lot of money, but they added a lot of veterans. They added Jarquez Denard, Rashawn Melvin, Ronnie Guntner, Cassius Marsh, and Al Woods. I think Al Woods is probably the best player in that bunch and his impact just because of how bad Jacksonville's run defense was last year. But the one big move they made was they signed Joe Schobert. So do you like the Joe Schobert signing?
Yeah, I do.
Do you like the Schobert signing and, like, the effect it has with Joe Schobert on the team? Or is it just like you think Joe Schobert's a talented player?
Well, I do think Joe Schobert is a talented player. Like, Cleveland players were lamenting the fact that Cleveland didn't try to re-sign him. So that's a feather in his cap. I think that, so in 2017, we had kind of, you know, Joe Schobert's clone in Paul Posluszny.
Yeah, they're really similar. Middle. Yeah.
They're really similar. And, like, I hate to say that, but, like, because they're both, like, pretty much, like, just stocky white dudes who play middle linebacker, but they
at a Big Ten school.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, Ryan, like, you know, but they actually play very similarly. And they let I mean, Paul Posluszny, he was really underappreciated at the time. We made fun of him all the time because he was just like a big slow, like he was like Mike Allstott playing middle linebacker. But he really clamped down the middle and let Telvin Smith and Miles Jack run wild and do like crazy highlight things every game. And so if that's kind of changed my mind from putting Miles Jack at middle linebacker to no, we need like a boulder in the middle of the field, and we need Miles Jack and someone else like doing what they do best, which is just being fast, reacting well, playing pass coverage, tackling running backs in the flat. Like we need these guys to have space and room to just react and do what they do best. They're not going to be guys that hold the middle. Joe Schobert is. And so I think Schobert is, he's a big signing for us because I think that moves Miles Jack to his better position. Mm-hmm. And that allows Miles Jack to do the things that he's better at, that build his confidence, but that also help the defense, stop opposing offenses.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the way I see it. Like, I think Schobert is a good player. I think he's a lot better in pass coverage than he's a really intelligent zone coverage defender. Mm-hmm. Like, he can compute like a lot of different roles and he can watch a crosser, but then the crosser goes outside the hash and then he gets deep and he can like rat and roll players off, and he can do like, you don't want him covering Christian McCaffrey, or you don't want him covering, like a really great tight end individually, one versus one. But like in zone coverage, he can do a lot of different things. He's a very intelligent player. And run defense, I think he's really blockable. Like, he takes a lot of blocks heads up. And he missed 18 tackles last year. And I think a lot of them were just because he was chasing after guys and dove. And, the guy getting paid $5 an hour to chart, you put that down as a missed tackle. And it's just like him trying to do something that he wasn't able to do. But I do think the key about the Schobert signing isn't the fact that, like, he's a good player, he's worth $10 million. It's that by having Joe Schobert, you're putting him in middle linebacker, and now Miles Jack can play Will, and Miles Jack can run all over the field and run from the middle of the field to the sideline and be an athlete instead of having to, read and react and switch gaps and deal with, this guy pulling over here when the play's actually going this way. And just by the fact that Schobert can simplify Miles Jack's game, I think that's what made the signing so important for the Jaguars for this season.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And it's nice that, Jaguars fans just have that recent example of Paul Posluszny, because like it helps them see like, okay, this is exactly the role that Schobert's here for. I think if we hadn't had that, we'd be like, well, why do we need that guy? We need like just maybe like a Miles Jack who's a little bit smarter in the middle. And it's like, no, you need more than that. You need someone who's like maybe a little bigger or someone who's better against the run, or someone who just has like a different mentality than Miles has. Like, Miles's mentality is great, maybe not for middle linebacker, but you put Miles outside and it's like, okay, he's got that. And so I think Jaguars fans, it was probably like the easiest slam dunk signing for us to have. We're like, oh, we have a Paul who's like, 6 years younger and is better against the pass. Like, yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. And that's the way I put it. I really thought the sign was done when it happened. And then going back and watching a bunch of video and just seeing how lost and confused Miles Jack looked out there at times, it kind of made me realize, there is an importance that going from worse in the league to acceptable. And I think that's something that's very valuable. And I think the Jaguars did that by, signing Joe Schobert this offseason. My last question for you defensively, I have two questions for you defensively. The first is, out of Quincy Williams, Donald Payne, Leon Jacobs, Najee Good, and Austin Calitro, like a decade from now, which one of those linebackers are you going to, think the most fondly upon, whenever it's like 2030?
That's a real who's who of linebackers you got there. I want to say Quincy Avery. Like, I want him, like, I love his story. I love the fact that he made his own highlight tape. I think he's got a ton of athleticism. I just think he's like really undersized. And I don't think the pro game, I don't think he's going to succeed very well in the pro game.
Mm-hmm.
Probably good. Probably Najee Good. I just think his size lends himself to matching up better to NFL linebackers.
Yeah. I think every NFL player whose last name's Good ends up not being very good in the league, which is fine. My personal favorite is Austin Kelechir, just because he like struggled to cover Ryan Griffin, and watching Ryan Griffin the Jets scorch the Jaguars was kind of fun to see last year too. But the point is that all these guys started linebacker for Jackson. They were all very bad. My other question for you about their defense, and the last one I have, is they did draft C.J. Henderson with their first round pick, the one ahead Chase on. And they also have Trey Herndon. They sign Denard. They sign Melvin. Where do you think, who do you think is going to end up starting the second cornerback spot? Because I'm assuming Henderson's going to start for sure. Do you think Herndon's going to be able to beat out Melvin or Denard and start as the second cornerback next year?
Yeah, no, I think Herndon. You know, my knee jerk is to say Herndon is the guy. I thought, you know, he struggled last year, but he showed enough to me that it's like, okay, if you put a good guy opposite him, he can be your number two guy. I think they brought in Denard as competition to see if Trey could do it. I'm going to say Trey, but I think cornerback is going to be a really interesting, like, under the radar position battle for the Jaguars. Mm-hmm. I think wide receiver is going to be fun to watch, even though the depth chart is like, it's predictable. Like, you can tell like who's going to be where, and like probably who's going to be cut. Same with tight end. Tyler Eifert is, you know, a new signing. So it's going to be interesting to watch him. But I think Trey Herndon gets it.
Yeah, he was in a real Minshew situation last year, where he goes from, you know, being a backup cornerback to Jalen Ramsey doesn't want to play anymore, to being the second corner, and going from like not playing to that role was difficult. And you know, he was, you know, one of the worst corners in the league last year, but I did think he had some flashes, and I think he could play like in a cover three scheme, you know, well enough.
Yeah, I wish he wasn't the, you know, CB2. Like, if he was your third best corner and you were like, hey, it's a project. You know, he's flashed, he struggles at, you know, A, B, and C, but like we think we have something here, I would love that. Like, he was in the perfect situation last year, mm-hmm. with Jalen and AJ ahead of him. It's like, okay, those two are dogs. Those two are like the guys, obviously, and Trey can just develop behind them. But him being forced into an outside role, it's like, you see what he does good, you see what he does bad. Unfortunately, what he does bad is more than what he does good, but he's also, you know, undrafted free agent.
Yeah.
He's also like a young dude. And so we'll see. Like Gardner, I think Trey was kind of thrust into a situation that he wasn't prepared for and that the team wasn't prepared for. And honestly, if we're looking at the weaknesses of the Jaguars defense last year, like, the pass defense wouldn't be at the top of my list. Like, it'd be that interior run defense. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. So I have four quick questions for you before tonight's show. And these are kind of like rapid fire, I guess. The first is, do you think Doug Marrone and Dave Caldwell make it past the season?
Yes, easily.
Okay. What would you consider a successful season for the 2020 Jaguars?
Eight wins, and Gardner Minshew is convincingly the guy you move forward with.
Okay, cool. And so going back to that, who starts at quarterback for the Jaguars in 2021?
Well, I don't think we'll have a successful season because we're the Jaguars. I think we trade the farm for Trevor.
Gotcha. And they have the opportunity to do so, it seems like, too, if they don't fall into that number one overall pick spot. So lastly, what's your prediction for the number of wins the Jaguars have this season?
6-10.
6-10. Yeah, I had them at 5-11. Like, I don't think they're bad enough to be like a scum scraping, you know, 2-win team. But if they do start off slow, the kind of concern is that they'll bench everybody and kind of tank the rest of the year to be able to draft somebody like Trevor Lawrence, and the first round Minshew doesn't look very good.
But who do they bench for? I mean, they have Chenault, who's a rookie. He's going to be your wide receiver too. You've got Gardner. I mean, you're going to bench Gardner? Like, why would you bench Gardner?
Yeah.
You've got Eifert as your tight end one. And Josh Oliver is your tight end too. And then on the defensive side of the ball,
everybody's so young. This is the youngest roster in the league.
Exactly. You're going to like just bench your young good players for young bad players.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think that kind of leads more to Jacksonville maybe being a 5 or 6 win team then, you know, than maybe let's say like, you know, the Jets or something like that, who if it's bad and they fire Gase or whatever, you know, maybe it kind of lends itself more to seeing something like that occur.
Dude, the Jets are like a sneaky tank for Trevor team.
Yeah, because I think Gase is awfully coached. Like, I like the talent the Jets have, but I hate Gase. Like, wherever he's going to be head coach, it's going to be bad. Like, everybody who doesn't play for him gets better, except for Peyton Manning.
Well, I mean, Peyton's kind of a unicorn, so.
Yeah. So do you have anything else you want to talk about tonight, or you got all the Jaguars out of your heart for the 2020 season?
I've got plenty of Jaguars in my heart, unfortunately. No, I got nothing else. I mean, I hope this didn't sound doom and gloom to your listeners, because I love the Jaguars. I mean, this is a team that I rooted for when Maurice Jones-Drew was our entire offense, and he was, you know, taking handoffs from Blaine Gabbert and then Chad Henne. And so, no, I mean, I loved this team when we had a guy whose name was literally Malarkey coaching it. So I'm going to love this team when, you know, this team's a lot better than that Malarkey team was. And they have, you know, a quarterback who may not be good, but he's fun to watch. I mean, yeah. if you need to understand why I'm excited about the possibility of watching football, all you need to do is watch that touchdown against the Denver Broncos last year and watch that game-winning drive. Like, I mean, the guy got out of 3 or 4 tackles in the pocket, just randomly lofted it up like he was playing, you know, flag football. And he won the game on the road. And we thought at that moment, it was like, oh, this is a playoff team, you know, as every dumb NFL fan does. When they beat a bad team on the road, they're like, oh, we're a playoff team. It's like, no, you're just another bad team.
You beat Joe Flacco.
Yeah, we beat Joe Flacco. Super Bowl winning Joe Flacco. We beat him. I'm excited to watch the game. I will say, though, I mean, we didn't really touch it that much this interview, but in terms of the COVID stuff, you know, we saw today, I don't know when you're going to release this, but like, we saw today was the first day that veterans were reporting. And I mean, teams like the Patriots and Packers just had a ton of players opting out. And I think we're going to see a lot more of that as the week progresses, because I think the deadline to opt out is August 5th or August 7th.
Okay.
And so we're going to see a lot more of that. And, you know, hey, I mean, more power to those guys. They're doing it because of their health, their family's health, whatever. But I think the NFL is going to press on. I mean, this is just – the NFL is a machine. And if they have to put in Keanu Reeves at quarterback for some, like, lowly, you know, team, like, they'll do that. They'll play the season with replacement players. But
call Zach Manberger up. I'm sure he'll play.
Yes, exactly.
I'm sure old Blaine will play again too, you know.
Yeah.
We get Jake Locker back. We get Tom Savage back.
We're going to get, I mean, I was going to say actually Blaine Gabbert. I was like, oh, Blaine Gabbert's long. And no, the dude is like still, he just beat us like 2 years ago. Like, good for him. we're going to get a lot of players opting out, and I mean, more power to him. Like, you know, hey, go for it. But, I'm still excited to watch the Jaguars play football this fall.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's, I'm kind of looking at, like, they're going to play, and like, it's their own personal choice to make. Like, I couldn't imagine you'd get upset because, you know, a player decides not to play this year because of these following reasons or whatever. And I do think you made a great point, though. Like, there's a difference between being a fan and then having, like, a rational conversation about if you think this player is good, this team is good, you know? And I think so much of it comes along the line of, as a fan, well, everything's good and everybody else is bad, when that's not how the case at all, you know? And so this was fun. This is a good conversation. And I feel like I better understand the Jaguars as a whole now after speaking to you about them.
Well, I apologize for that.
I think a good tombstone would be, there's a lot of Jaguars in my heart, unfortunately. Or there, I live with a lot of Jaguars in my heart, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm going to ask the wife to make sure that's in our living will.
Well, sounds good. Well, until this is the first episode of the AFC South preview. And until next time, I'm Matt Weston. Thank you for listening to Ballred Radio. And thank you for being on tonight, Ryan.
All right. Thanks, man.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.